the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 18th of July, and I'm recording at 9:30 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And I'm going to first, though, start by just having a quick look at what happened over the last week, and particularly in here today. Well, you could say, or I will say, that it's been dominated, at least part of the week. The latter part of the week was dominated by the Malaysian Airlines incident, a really horrendous incident, as we all know. Now, what's impressive today, though, is how strongly Wall Street and some of the other stock markets have bounced back. Now, if we try to analyze that, and we say, well, first, Russia's denied it. Nobody's going to have definitive evidence just yet, although I think they're very close to it. Seems to me pretty obvious that Russian favoring rebel troops shot that plane down with, of course, weapons that Russia gave them. And I posted there was an audio in that front piece, that lead piece that I posted myself yesterday, which I think it went out at about 11:40 on it's a time sensitive scroll, and appeared to be a conversation between the people who actually shot down the plane and their Russian monsters. But I don't want to dwell on that here too much. But certainly good strength, so shown by stock markets for the most part in here today, or certainly Wall Street. And what's that mean? Well, it tells us that I think that there are still a lot of people who've been chasing these stock markets. Bull markets tend to climb a wall of worry, and this is no exception. A lot of value players got out too early. They always do. And this is still moving higher, although there's a lot of evidence that it's sort of long in the tooth. Generally, we're in the sixth year of this bull market, early in the sixth year, this bull market cycle. And as you know, valuations had gone up on Wall Street, but not across the board. And we've seen some corrective phases here overall. But let me go back now and start with Asia, as I usually do in audios, and pick this up. And what are going to be the big plays here? Well, I actually like pretty much the whole region. These markets can be very volatile, and my top picks, though, and you've heard me say this in other audios, would be India, showing phenomenal relative strength. It's getting a consolidation, a sort of a medium-term consolidation of all the celebratory buying in anticipation of Narendra Modi's stunning victory, which exceeded all expectations. And I think that really the strategy that I would advocate, and that I will try to follow myself, I've got a fair amount of India in my personal accounts, but I've leveraged it up a little bit. Aggressively here, but it's a substantial position in my investments, which I've been holding since 2003, or which I began building in 2003, and bought the dips, and I'll do that again when we next see a reasonable dip, because my view is that we could see India on the basis that governance is everything, and India was a country where people worried whether there ever be any good governance or effective governance. Well, you've got it now in spades, and I think this is a 50% to 100% appreciation here over the next few years. And that'll depend in part on what happens elsewhere, but I'll go on to that in a few moments. Now, what else do I like? I've mentioned Vietnam, and that is, I think, is certainly attractive. The risk there, though, which we all know about, is China. So if China's too aggressive, and actually China can be a risk for any of these countries, even India, there's a big Chinese India border there, a disputed border. So the reality is that we've got an aggressive China. Hopefully, it will show restraint more often than not, but it does have a somewhat worrying tendency to test the boundaries. So what about China itself? It's a cheap market and should be going into recovery mode here. I think that we certainly can't say that the indices, as particularly the Shanghai A-share index, we can't say that that's out of the starting gate yet. But it's looking basey. I say that with caution because I've said it before, and it's just sort of dragged on and ranged a little lower and messed around. But it's certainly, in my opinion, a good medium-term recovery, lengthy medium-term recovery, if not a short-term play. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was a reasonably good short-term play here as well. But then there's for special mention, I should pick out Indonesia. Again, a good election result there. So there's a lot of optimism about the new Widodo government. And again, governance is so important with these emerging markets. But a factor that I would say is that overall, the region just looks attractive generally. Developed economy, Japan, completing an understandable and very lengthy consolidation of gains. But I think the next big move is going to be on the upside, and I don't see anything on the chart to put me off that conclusion. So it's really quite attractive here generally. I can't think of a really bad market in the Asia Pacific region. Then I'm also going to mention Australia, which can be a late in the bull market cycle runner as natural resources prices start to pick up. And we certainly see that potential on the charts. And I think that's a very attractive play in here as well. Now, going on to Europe, well, the clumsy politics and the Euro situation, where it's kind of a one size fits all requirement, and of course it doesn't fit all. So it's bit of an unwieldy and bureaucratic and a bit too lefty for my tastes. Well-meaning, of course, but tough hurdles there for business people in Europe, and a lot of them have been voting with their feet, as you know. Also, energy problems, massive energy problems, and Europe just doesn't seem to have the collective will to. Well, that's not fair, perhaps, but I think the collective will was wrong, and they went flat out for renewables, and they put themselves in a difficult position and ran up their energy costs very considerably by closing down nuclear and building just an absolute forest of these ludicrous windmills, which, well, I don't want to get started on that again, and I wrote about them a little bit yesterday. Their proximity to catch fire is one of the biggest latest hazards here overall. But so Europe is in a difficult position, and then you've got Russia, And that is a serious problem. We know that the EU is, well, it was first the European Economic Community, and that was put together with the rather noble intention of making sure that Europeans didn't go on killing each other as they did with considerable success. Through centuries, and not least in the first half of the 20th century. So, again, you've got a kind of a pacifist mentality there on a democratic, albeit not as democratic as it ought to be or could be, in my opinion. But there's a bit of empire building here, and they are in an embarrassing position, in a worrying position, given the Russian situation, and it's dangerous, and I think it will remain dangerous, and that I think has certainly checked Europe's upward move in stock market terms. For at least the short term. And my guess is that it will pick up again later on. We'll move on and people will look beyond the Russian problem and the energy problem, and they'll focus on the situation that we have in terms of easy money coming from the European Central Bank. And that will help companies, particularly Europe's autonomies, and there are a fair number of them, and not least in Germany. Okay, and then we move on to the Americas, and I'll start with South America, and a lot of resources producers there, and that's a late in the cycle performing group, and Brazil really leading the way in here, up another 2.5% here today nearly, and that's a strong recovery. Now, Owen's done a fantastic job of highlighting a lot of the shares in that market and other markets and resources that are recovering. And there are still plenty of shares around the globe that look attractive, that are beginning to perform, that are not wildly overvalued. And he points out the ones that are wildly overvalued as well. And I hope you're finding that useful. I think it's really very relevant and informative stuff. Okay, then let's go on to Wall Street, and this is still strong in here. Again, we had the sell-off yesterday, but today a good bounce back. The S&P's up 1%. The Nasdaq's up 1.5, over 1.5%. That's the Nasdaq 100. That's good action here overall. Now, this market's a little bit expensive, and that is a bit of a concern. It's a little bit overextended relative to the moving average. Also, we know we haven't seen one of those 10% plus corrections in God knows how long. Well, too long, over 2 years, obviously. There are risks out there, but the bull trend remains firmly intact. Again, value investors been getting out for the last 2 years or more, and have to keep running back, and they haven't done that just in the United States either. I'm relieved to say that I've just held all of my equities, and my resources sectors, lagging resources sectors, now beginning to perform as well as other positions. So you'll be doing at least as well. And so it's been an awfully good time for stock markets, and it's not over. That's part of the great news in here. This bull trend is just not over. Now, what about the longer term? Since this is big picture audio, and I'll mention this briefly, quickly, because I've mentioned it pretty much in every one of these Friday audios that I've done. But my feeling is that there are some, excuse me, there are some question marks over the next 3 to 4 years or so. This is a little inevitably there's a fair amount of guesswork that goes on in all of this, but I think it's well founded in historic precedent and the reasons I'm about to give. But a little bit of a tricky period as we get back to a normalization of interest rates. And I've maintained that the economy is doing just what it should be doing, or just what you could expect it to be doing following a serious credit crisis recession. When you get massive deleveraging by corporations and individuals, that lowers government tax receipts, government debts go up, and that means that you've got an economy that limps along at best for 6 to 8 years. And that's what we're seeing. But the key factor is that the U.S. is benefiting from the QE. Certainly, investors have benefited enormously from QE. And so we've got to be a little bit concerned about, as we get back to a normalization of interest rates, is that going to churn stock markets a little bit more? Well, my answer is yes, probably. It might even produce a small statistical bear market. That would be something a little in excess of the 20% level, but that's not something to bail out of good positions for. You don't want to go into a cyclical bear market, and I don't think it beckons immediately, but you don't want to go into a cyclical bear market with a lot of leveraged longs in there for obvious reasons. But the key factor is that I see no reason why we should see another 2000 or 10 or and 2008. And beyond that normalization of rates, I think the historic evidence very strongly suggests that we will move into or we're already in the foothills of the next secular bull trend. Now, a secular bull trend lasting at least a generation can easily be punctuated by a bear market or two, just as we saw with 1987 in the last secular bull market. But that it is a phenomenal time to be making money in stock markets. We get tremendous performance. The fundamentals are always different from secular bull market to secular bull market, except that there are some generally good earnings performances overall. And the drivers of that secular bull market are going to be, in my opinion, the accelerated rate of technological innovation. This is a golden era of technology, as some call it. Others describe it as a third industrial revolution, although I don't think that's quite fits as comfortably as the other two descriptions that I've just given you. But this is phenomenal, and it benefits everyone, but it increases corporate efficiency enormously. It also creates some job problems because the accelerated rate of technological innovation enables corporations to replace workers, both white collar and blue collar workers, with smart machines. Now, those people inevitably eventually find additional work, as we've always seen in previous cycles. But if the technological innovation is accelerating, and it certainly is, then you get longer delays in terms of those job markets picking up. That creates some individual hardships, but the corporations, again, they do exceptionally well. And in a global autonomy, the autonomies, those big multinational sector leaders that we like so much, well, they go where the money is around the globe. And that's just going to be a spectacular success story over the next 25 years. You want to be careful when, always look at these on long-term charts, long-term weekly charts, with a 200-day or 40-week moving average on them. If you produce that in our library, just do the 200 day. If you're looking at it on Bloomberg, you need to put a 40-week MA to get the same thing. But watch the regression, because when share prices in uptrends accelerate above the 200-day moving average, particularly if that's part of a major move to the upside, then they get very overextended, and you can see a very lengthy medium-term top, and a long pullback and consolidation period. So again, when the market gets euphoric, that's when you want to think about either lightening, if you're a big institutional investor, as many of you are, or at least having a trailing stop, if you are private and not quite so big as the institutions, and because you don't want to hang around throughout a long pullback and lengthy ranging period. The flip side of the coin is that big accelerations in downtrends below the MAs, we saw that certainly in 2000, we saw that in 2008 and 9. I don't think we'll see it too much in the in the future, but again, it'll happen when something gets an individual. It'll happen to individual shares, less so the market as a whole. But so, accelerating rate of technological innovation, big bull factor. The one, and I keep my fingers crossed when I say this, is lower energy prices in real terms. I think we are likely to see that. But it's not spread out equally. The U.S. has taken full advantage of that through its development of the whole fracking field. Others have turned their noses up at this, particularly in Europe. Others don't have the wherewithal to do it. So that's more problematical. But over time, certainly the renewables are improving, led by solar. Which is the best of them in my opinion. I think the evidence is fairly significant. There's a whole lot of wind, but that's an expensive one, and those repair costs will be absolutely enormous. Social issue problems there as well. But there will be other renewals, and there'll be the new generation nuclear reactors, and then the thorium reactors. So there are a lot of interesting things going on in the energy field. Okay, and then that third plank in the secular bull market is the just the globalization, and talking about now really mostly almost overwhelming, oh well, overwhelmingly capitalistic economic systems, whether it's command capitalism, such as we see in China, or democratic capitalism, as you see from the UK to USA to India and so on. This and there and because so many economies have moved away from some of their moribund economic systems and moved on to basically capitalistic models, and also because the population is actually growing, and the emerging markets are benefiting just as much as anybody else from the technology, and so that means we've got these rising middle classes that we haven't seen previously in the world, not to this extent, and that's a hugely bullish theme. So, any multinational share that's leads its is a leader in its sector, it's almost certainly an autonomy and is in a strong position to take advantage of that. And I think those are the three main pillars of the secular bull market that I've talked about. Well, enough of all that. Move on quickly here to interest rates. I'm surprised that these government bond rates are as low as they are here. To put this in perspective on the big picture, I think it's a lengthy bottoming out process. And we're really closer to the lower side of the base in this bottoming out process, which looks to me like it's going to take at least a few more months in forming. And this is the end of that 31-year plus bull market in government bonds. So I think the next big push is likely to be to the upside. A lot of people are staying in bonds because they're worried that either we get a third big bear market, or that we're going to have a very deflationary environment over the lengthy medium term. Well, we'll get pockets of deflation, but I don't think so, not with all the money printing that we're going on. I think that there will be more inflationary risks than deflationary risks over the lengthy medium to longer term, given the money printing that actually takes place. But the topic is a market sector topic is the government bond yields. I wouldn't want to be in those bonds. I've said that for months, and if not several years, and I think I have said it for several years. And some people will say, well, you wouldn't have done badly there. And and depending on when the entry point was, I would agree with that. But the next big move on these yields, they certainly can't go down much lower. And unless the whole global economy falls apart, and I don't think that's happening, and but they could very easily go up over the medium to longer term, and I think they will. So I don't. I'd rather go for the yields in equities, but watch those yields because they will also tell you when risks are picking up in the equity markets. And for instance, we'll go on to an amber light when we get a sustained move in the 3 year, beg pardon, in the U.S. 10 year, which when that gets a sustained move above 3%, I say that'll be an amber light flashing, in my opinion. It's at 2.44 today, so that's not an imminent risk. And the 3% probably isn't that big a risk either. Now, but it'll alert us that the trend is changing. Elsewhere, hard money. I like it. These markets are ranging: gold, silver, platinum, and palladium. Well, palladium's been trending higher, and platinum is pushing up out of a base. And gold and silver, I think they'll range sideways to higher here overall. People are still talking them down in the West, at any rate. Meanwhile, we're moving into the Indian wedding season. We're moving into what is seasonally a more favorable period. That really starts at the end of the Western and West of summer. So you get into the fourth quarter of the year, and that should be a more favorable period for these precious metals. But my feeling is they're buys on setbacks. Now, looking elsewhere, what about currencies here overall? I think there's a clear case for the euro needing to move somewhat lower. So why hasn't it happened? And the answer to that is easy, because it's the second most important reserve currency in the world by a long way. So a lot of people will go in and buy euros, Chinese, for instance. And that will keep it a little bit higher than it would otherwise be. But I think in terms of fundamental economic performance that Europe could do with a The EU could do with a somewhat softer euro. Sterling's firm, given its growth, which was poor, but the recovery—it's been a leader in the recovery. Long may that last, I say, with a little bit of patriotic interest. And I think it will. I think it will last, at least if we get another conservative government. So I keep my fingers crossed over that as well. And looking at other commodities here, crude oil—it's a game changer. It's—I was concerned about it when we saw Brent, and that's the one to watch. When we saw Brent up around the just touched very briefly, I think almost the 116 level, that was what, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and then it pulled right back down, reached almost 104. It was the whole ISIS situation in the Middle East which pushed it up so high, but then it came right back down, then picked up again as reckless Putin, with his moves, and providing the pro-Russian rebels really to shoot down that Malaysian airline. That hasn't been confirmed, so perhaps it's slightly indiscreet of me to be mentioning it here at this stage, but the amount of evidence pointing to it is picking up steadily. Okay, so oil. What's going to happen? Well, over the longer term, I think it'll be going lower in real terms. Natural gas will increasingly eat into that, into the oil market, and eventually become even more important. Natural gas relative to crude oil become even more important. I think though the Middle Eastern situation is well, to say that it's unstable is really a bit of an understatement here. But it does seem that everyone, at least everyone who's in power, wants to keep producing the oil for the revenue, obviously. Hopefully that continues, and for the sake of the people and our subscribers in the Middle East, I just hope that we get some better governance and less tension. But that's a concern. We still have to watch that. Oil prices can still a game changer, but I'm hopeful on a long-term basis, and have been for a long time, as you know. And what about the foods? Well, it's a good year. Good year here overall. Those food prices are mostly down. There are exceptions. We had problems. The Californian almond crop was seriously threatened. That would have certainly caused problems, but they took water away from some of the annual crops and put them. Gave the water to save the almond trees. That was certainly a good decision to have actually made. But for the most part, around the world, and you're seeing this in the United States right now, you're seeing it in Europe right now. There's been enough moisture, and in this climate change, if that's what it is, it's mild so far. But to the extent that the climate is changing, it is putting around more moisture, and in many regions. And that is helping the global food production. But so it looks like 2014, well, I think we already have clear evidence that it is 2014, second consecutive year of mostly somewhat better crops. Doesn't apply to everything. Coffee prices are higher because of the problems in South America, and also in too much dry in South America, and too much wet in the Asian regions where the Robusta is grown. But for the most part, these staple grains and beans, it's been good news. So that will help to keep food price inflation down. And I think that's pretty much it. I don't want to rabbit on here. So I'll just say have a fantastic weekend. All the very best to all of you.